Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Brandon Triangle on the Left of Straight Radio Network, a safe space for LGBTQ guests, listeners, and allies to come in and share in the conversation as we bring you the latest in news, politics, entertainment, and stories from the community in the United States and around the world. And now, without further ado, the Brandon Triangle bringing you all points of view.
Welcome to the Brandon Triangle. I'm your host, Brandon Carmody. This is our debut episode. Today is Sunday, the 17th of September, 2017, and I'm so pleased and honored to be joining Left of Straight Radio. Left of Straight Radio is going into their third season, their podcast award winner, so this is really a great opportunity. So I'll just take a moment here to tell you a little bit about who I am and what my role is in the community. Brandon Carmody, I am an actor, writer, songwriter, piano man, LGBT activist, and iTunes artist. I have done some work in both the film, television, radio, and music industries, so I'm very diverse, and I've been doing this since about 1990. If you were to pull up my IMDb page right now, you're going to see a couple of odd titles come out at you, like The Heater, Bugs and Beer, Jive Genie, and Ambrosia. But the real heart, the real meat and bones of my story is that I've had the distinct pleasure of working on a film set with such Hollywood greats as Sean Astin, Patty Duke, Amy Smart, and I did a horror film with Robert Englund, who was the legendary Freddy Krueger. So my biggest heartache when it comes to Hollywood films is that I had a featured moment as the bailiff in the ending, final, horrific moments of a horror film with Robert Englund that would have been my big screen debut and epic, and it's deleted from the movie. It's cut. It's not even in the special edition, director's cut, deleted scenes reel. However, I'm in the trailer. I can prove it. Believe me, we will come back to this at a later point, but I just wanted to give you a real quick tour as to the experiences that I've had in the film industry. I, as a musician and songwriter, have been learning the piano since the age of 12, have several albums, and I'm reviving that experience right now. I have a brand new keyboard, and starting on Monday, the 18th of September, I'm actually going to post a rehearsal video every day, so I'm going to be sharing quite a bit of my musical life with everyone here in the near future. So that being said, when it comes to the LGBTQ community, I was part of a unique group of 3,000 couples in Portland, Oregon in 2004 that had the gay marriage experience. There was some Portland city commissioners that decided to offer gay wedding licenses in defiance of what was going on in our election back in 2004, and I was able to obtain a license and get legally wedded to a partner, which unfortunately a year later was overturned by the Oregon Supreme Court. So I have a small bit of gay marriage history that I was a part of, and I'm proud to be a part of that legacy. And as you know today, per the Supreme Court decision of Obergefell v. Hodges, that is now the law of the land. So with that being said, we're going to segue at this time into our first guest for some important discussions. We have a special guest joining us right now, Kathy Renna. For our listeners, a note, our guest Dexter Norris has to reschedule. So thank you, Dexter. We will try to have you back on the show as soon as possible. Kathy, thank you for stepping in on short notice. Kathy is a longtime LGBT activist, PR guru. How are you doing today, Kathy?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. There is so much to catch up on since we've last communicated, but the main reason that we wanted you to come on today is to memorialize and remember the life of Edie Windsor. Let's just fill our listeners in. Edie Windsor was an American LGBT rights activist and a technology manager at IBM, who was the lead plaintiff in the Supreme Court of the United States case versus Windsor, which successfully overturned Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act and was considered a landmark legal victory for our movement. And unfortunately, at the age of 88, Edie Windsor passed away on September 12th. What memories or feelings can you tell us about Edie Windsor, Kathy?
Wow. Well, I have many. I'm very blessed to have had a lot of time to spend with Edie. I worked. I knew her a little bit before the case and during the Supreme Court case, but I actually worked for her as her publicist after the Supreme Court case. As she used to joke with me, she needed help navigating her newfound celebrity. you know, it's hard because, you know, we're all extremely sad. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. She's such a loss, not just to the community, but really to the country, as we saw, you know, everything from Barack Obama and so many other politicians and celebrities and people of note tweeting out and putting on social media their condolences. But to me, it was really interesting that as I scrolled through my Facebook page right after I found out she had passed, I just saw photo after photo of just folks, those of us in the community with Edie, because she never said no to a photo. She never said no to stopping to chat with somebody. And, you know, I think that's really her legacy, is that she was so open and loving, and, you know, she fought the good fight for decades. The Supreme Court case was something that was really, to me, the coda to a long life of activism. First being, as a woman, being one of the few at IBM as a programmer, and then, you know, years later, working with the LGBT Community Center in New York City to help them be the computerize themselves, because they didn't have computers, being on the board of SAGE, working on LGBT senior issues, and then, of course, the Supreme Court case. And, you know, she was 88. You know, we shouldn't have been too shocked or surprised that, you know, she, you know, she'd lived a long, incredible life. She had a heart condition, and so, you know, she struggled with her health for a long time. It was amazing she was able to do as much as she did the last several years, but it's still hard. I mean, I always kind of saw her as immortal and, you know, invincible, because she, you know, I had trouble keeping up with her sometimes. You know, she was the queen of, is there an after party, you know, after the award ceremony?
Well, I'll never get those images out of my mind of her, you know, standing on the steps of the Supreme Court, just reaching out her arms. Those are some iconic photos of her. And so you were talking about that being at the end of the journey. So if we just take folks back, so what prompted this was, unfortunately, the death of her spouse, if I recall, Taya Spire, back in 2009. There was because she was going to be the sole beneficiary of Spire's estate, there was an estate tax, and they wanted Edie to pay $363,000 in federal estate taxes on the inheritance,
right.
And that started the ball rolling. Were you in any way involved in the case, or what can you tell us about the case itself?
Well, no, it's interesting, though, in terms of the history of it. I mean, at the time, marriage equality was not issue numero uno for the community. A lot of organizations were saying, no, hold back, we're not ready, we don't have the support on the court, on the Supreme Court yet, or really in lower courts as well. We don't have the public support. And Edie was like, I'm in my 70s. I have a documented almost 40-year marriage. She had been married legally in Canada a couple years before Thea's death by some friends of hers, Brendan Fay and Kathy Marino Thomas with Marriage Equality USA. So, you know, a lot of the big organizations like HRC and Lambda were saying, take it slower. But as her progressed under the guidance of her amazing attorney, Robbie Kaplan, who took the case on pro bono via her firm.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, but as over time, as she started to make progress, the organizations came along. As you know, this is often the case that it takes a maverick to get the ball rolling and be willing to take risks when, you know, some of our big organizations, I used to work for GLAAD for a long time, are not as likely to, are big organizations that become more conservative, not politically, but risk averse in some ways. It's an interesting dynamic. But at the end of the day, you know, she brought people together. And so, you know, it was great that the ACLU was incredibly supportive of her, Lambda, HRC, the task force, all the big organizations, as well as, of course, all the grassroots organizations that she sprang and came up from. But it was really historic in terms of changing the hearts and minds of millions of people. As Hillary Clinton, who spoke at her funeral on Friday in New York, I was there with my partner, you know, Hillary said that Edie Windsor changed so many hearts and minds, including mine. You know, and I thought it took a lot of courage for her to say that.
Yeah.
And she was absolutely right, you know. And it was an incredibly moving ceremony. Her cousin, Edie's cousin, spoke, who's about a year younger than her, so she's in her late 80s as well. One of her nephews spoke. Her widow, Judith, spoke. Hillary Clinton spoke. Michael Adams from Sage, and some very longtime friends, you know.
Beautiful.
Edie was a person who had friends who were friends when, you know, she was first meeting Thea, you know, and with her in the 60s and 70s. That says something about a person right there, if they can not only have that kind of long relationship with someone, but also decades of friendship to show. And she was really an extraordinary woman. I was so blessed to be able to get to know her and work with her and for her and have some impact in her post-Supreme Court decision time, especially as it pertained to the media, which was something that was often a challenge sometimes with her, you know, given her health and her schedule and her age. But she was,
mm-hmm.
you know, she did as much as she could, and she knew she was a role model, and, you know, it was worth it every time a kid came up to her and would say, "We have a picture of you in Time magazine on our refrigerator. If it wasn't for you, my parents couldn't be married." I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I get goosebumps just thinking about.
That's a life well lived.
Still.
That's a life well
yep.
lived. I tried to get an interview with her at some point over the last 2 years, but I think her representative said there was a health issue. So I just want to read out some quotes, if we could just share. So these are quotes from Hillary at the ceremony. "Because of her, people came out, marched in their first parade, married the love of their life." That was from your Twitter feed. Now I have a HuffPost mm-hmm. quote from Hillary. "Their devotion to each other was its own quiet revolutionary act." She stated
mm-hmm.
Windsor wanted to be remembered not just for her activism, but also for the attitude that made it possible. She refused to give up on the promise of America. She said, "There wasn't a cynical defeatist bone in her body." And finally, the former presidential candidate attributed part of her personal politics to Windsor, saying that with her Supreme Court victory, she helped change hearts and minds, including mine. Is that all
yep.
true? Was that your recollection?
That is absolutely. And I would say for those who are interested, it was Temple Emmanuel in New York City, and they live streamed the ceremony, and it's archived on their website. So you can go back and watch the entire thing. The Big Apple Corps, which is a band, a kind of a brass band, but they do have some wind instruments, and then they do a marching band, basically, from New York City that's LGBT. They came to Washington when she was the Grand Marshal in June, and I was with her, and it was just phenomenal. She loved the band, and they played Hallelujah, and they also played Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which was really extraordinary. Everyone sang along, played it in front of the Stonewall as well, the day she died. I mean, the day she died, on Tuesday, hundreds of people, myself included, went into to Manhattan and went to the Stonewall Inn, because, you know, that's what we do in New York when we lose someone or when we have a
yeah.
victory to celebrate in the LGBTQ community. And so hundreds of people, and the cops couldn't shut off the street. They didn't have the staff, so they put us in the park. And, you know, it was really beautiful, because we got to laugh and we got to cry and we got to celebrate her and we got to mourn her and we got to just acknowledge just an extraordinary person who is always going to be in our hearts in a way that I think was very helpful and cathartic for a lot of people. You know, like I said, a lot of us who knew her closely, of course, are devastated, but, you know, she touched so many lives. And even if she just met you for a few minutes, she made you feel like, you know, she knew you forever and you knew you were going to be her friend forever. And that was her. That was the magic of Edie. That was really the magic of Edie Windsor.
Yeah, there's some really incredible tributes. Jim Obergefell, who, incredible man, Obergefell
mm-hmm.
B. Hodges, who I've spoken to many times, quoting from his Twitter, "The world has lost a bright light. Thank you for your courage and inspiration. Thank you for your friendship." President Obama also memorializing her. So absolutely, Kathy. And so she will be remembered for her legacy in the community and for her life. She now joins the ranks of those that have become a roadmap part of our history. I think that history
mm-hmm.
will be very favorable and very fair to Edie Windsor.
I could not agree more. It's going to be interesting to see how we're able to do this. It's things people were thinking about already, like how do we continue her legacy? And honestly, the best thing to do is what Christine Quinn, who was a New York City council member, out lesbian, also ran for mayor, good friend of Edie, said, is to continue to resist, to continue to advocate for equality for everyone. It's what she would have wanted. And actually, she then said, she made us all laugh. She said, because if you don't, Edie's going to come back and haunt you. She said, if you guys don't keep fighting, she's going to come back and haunt you. And, you know, I think she's right. I do think she's right.
No, I do want to ask if I can a little bait and switch. This question was intended for a prior guest, but Hillary Rodham Clinton released a book, What Happened, and you saw her speak at Edie's funeral. I don't know if you've read the book or are familiar with, but obviously we were there for the election. Do you have any thoughts about Hillary's book and current tour, and do you kind of see that as kind of like a cathartic experience for her to put out this book and kind of deal with the election outcome at this point, Kathy?
Well, I did pre-order the book, and unfortunately it came out on the Tuesday that he passed away. So it's still sitting, and I'm traveling right now, so it's sitting in my apartment in New Jersey. I will get to it. I'm really glad she wrote it. I think for her, I hope it's cathartic, but for all of us, I hope it's an opportunity to have a conversation and learn some lessons about how the election went, how she was treated as a woman.
Yes.
And I think that there are some things that, you know, we really need to work on as progressives, as Democrats, as a very diverse nation that I think made a horrific, horrific error in electing our current president and is going to be having to deal with the division that he continues to foster. And so, you know, I know people can be critical of Hillary, and I could probably find some things that I don't agree with her on completely, but, you know, she's a woman who's lived a life of public service, not unlike E.B. Windsor. In fact, in a very overt political public way, and done so much. And so, you know, I hope that what this does at the end of the day is make people think more and talk more and not become more divided. And I'm looking forward to the book because I think, you know, like I said, I may not agree with everything that's in it, but for her, I'm glad that she was able to do that. And I watched her on Rachel Maddow when Rachel did a very long interview with her. I'm sure it's online on MSNBC.com. And
yes.
I sat there, and I was, of course, you know, very obviously impressed, nodding yes a lot, agreeing with her, thrilled to see her on the public stage again, but also kind of heartbroken that could have been should have been our president, really should have been.
Yes.
Whether you totally agree with her or not.
She graciously attended the inauguration. That's part of what's discussed in there is how she graciously attended the inauguration of what should have been her president. I mean, that takes guts.
Exactly.
Come on, that takes some real guts. So just pulling in some LGBTQ requests for news, or if you've got your ear to the ground, I know that you're really in touch with the orgs and with some vital people in the LGBTQ community. If you had to tell me like one or two top concerns, I mean, is it the transgender military ban? Are people feeling like our rights are under assault again? Like what do you hear when you put your ear to the ground with our community right now, Kathy?
Well, it's a very, very challenging time, partly even though we've gotten over the shock for the most part, it's still shocking to feel, you know, that jarring sense that we live in a very different world. I joke with my daughter, she loves that show Stranger Things, and I always say, I feel like we're living in the upside down. I mean, I feel like we're living in a completely different world than we were when President Obama was president. And again, we may not have agreed on every step, but we were always moving forward and we were always having conversations and there was always respect. And now what I see is someone who is dismantling all of that progress. And so I would say two things. One is, yes, I would say transgender issues in general, not simply the trans ban in the military, which is horrible and really stupid and not even something that the working folks in the armed forces agree with. But I would say the growing visibility of transgender children in particular and how the, you know, larger culture needs to learn a lot more about this. There's still a lot of ignorance and hatred and backlash and the continuing epidemic of violence, particularly against trans women of color. So I think that those are, you know, the trans issues in general are something that we're seeing, you know, being pushed forward. And then in terms of the rest of the community, I advise everyone to stay as informed and engaged as they can and to look at how our issues intersect. I was at a rally. It was early on in the Trump presidency. It was around the Muslim ban, and I was at the Stonewall Inn, and we had reporters there, tons of reporters, and we had 6,000 or 7,000 people. And a reporter said to me, the gay community is supporting the Muslim community. And I looked at him, and I said, do you not think that there are LGBT Muslim people? Like, you know, like every, and then as if like, you know, the clouds cleared and the skies opened and the sun came out, this young woman walked by with a sign. I couldn't have paid her, you know, to come by at a better time. It said every executive order affects LGBTQ people. And that's the intersectionality of our issues and understanding how DACA affects undocumented queer people, how Betsy DeVos's actions of the Department of Education affect all kinds of students, LGBTQ and other, you know, and the intersection, you know, within those communities, and how every single executive order and every single action of this administration will in some way affect queer people, possibly simply because they're queer or because they're queer and African-American or Latino or lower income or live in a rural place or are lesbians or, you know, or are women if it comes to reproductive rights. All those kinds of issues are, these are all our issues now. And I hope that people get more engaged because we all have a stake in what's going on.
Awesome. Kathy, yeah, we are running out of our time, but I just want to thank you so much for coming on the Brandon Triangle here on Left of Straight Radio. Once again, you were just listening to Kathy Renna, media activist, PR guru. And if I can plug you, your website is targetq.com, not clue, but Q,
yes.
Q-U-E.
Q.
Thank you, Kathy.
C-U-E, C-U-E, like a billiard Q, C-U-E.
up next, folks, is our entertainment segment. We're going to be speaking with Delene Roberts from lesflix.com, reviewing some LGBT movies, and we have a surprise guest. So tune right back in after this break. Thank you, Kathy. Once again, you've been listening to the Brandon Triangle on Left of Straight Radio. My name is Brandon Carmody, and once again, we would like to thank everyone at Left of Straight Radio, Scott Fullerton. Please check us out online. The Brandon Triangle will be every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 6 p.m. Eastern. And again, we look forward to bringing you all points of view. And welcome back to the show. I'm Brandon Carmody. We're here doing our weekly entertainment section. We're here with Delene Roberts from Lesflix. Welcome to the show, Delene.
Hi, Brandon.
Well, we have an exciting film to talk about here, an exciting segment. We're going to be talking about the film Sordid Wedding by Del Shore. So will you be so kind as to give us your introduction about what is A Very Sordid Wedding?
Sure. About 17 years ago, writer and director Del Shores released Sordid Lives. It was a dark comedy about coming out in small-town Texas. The film quickly became an LGBT cult classic. This year, A Very Sordid Wedding, the sequel, premiered at Outfest LA, and it toured film festivals all over the country to rave reviews and sold-out shows. This new film is set in 2015, just after the Supreme Court ruling that made marriage equality the law of the land. The film explores how the Sordid Lives characters would react when marriage equality comes storming into Winters, Texas. The sequel stars many of the original cast, including Bonnie Bedelia, Ann Walker, Kurt Geiger, Leslie Jordan, Newell Alexander, and Lorna Scott.
All right, Delena, that's exciting. Thank you. So we're going to run the trailer really quick, and then we have a surprise guest. So without further ado, folks, this is the official trailer for A Very Sordid Wedding. Enjoy.
Well, Mama, it's been 17 years since you died. My son came out as gay right in front of your cousin.
And Mama's ghost is haunting me.
Seems like just yesterday that Peggy tripped over them wooden legs.
And I took one of them legs and I bashed in all the windows on his pickup truck.
I'm putting back together that 15-year tribute for Peggy.
Hey, Mama, you could throw us our wedding.
It's just not exactly the kind of wedding that I always envisioned.
I need you to rescue me.
Well, did you hear that the hitchhiker murderer has escaped the pen?
Rise and shine, give God the glory, glory.
I like crazy.
Party's new in town.
And who are you, the welcome wagon?
Well, you're just never going to believe what the church is doing.
They're talking
about an anti-equality revival.
Supreme Court's not the law of this land. Word of God's the law of this land.
We want our rainbow back.
No cakes, no flowers, no photos.
Our kind of Christianity frightens me.
Some things in the Bible that just do not make a lick of sense to me.
Well, I live by the Bible, Sissy. I don't need it to make sense.
That doesn't sound right.
You can't fling a cat in this town without hitting a bigot.
Folks who want to tell you how to live your life.
Gays can't get married in the church.
This feels like a trick question.
Gays can't get married in the courthouse.
Hearts and minds are changing.
We have stopped equality.
Anti-equality works both ways.
And we must stop villainizing our own children.
This is where I learned to be gay. Underwood table.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the amateur show here in the Rose Room at F4.
Ain't it a bitch?
Not kind. I am so confused.
All right, and we're back. We're back now on Left to Straight Radio. You're listening to Brandon Carmody and Delina Roberts. Folks, ladies and gentlemen, across this great nation, without further ado, we have a very special surprise guest for you. We would like to welcome Del Shores to the show. Del, welcome.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hello.
Hey. Thanks for having me. This was kind of a fun little. This is what happens on Twitter, y'all. You go on and you're retweeting and you're answering everything, and all of a sudden you get a message and you go. By the way, I have to ask always, what is it? This is internet, right? I can say anything I want, correct?
You know, Scott, the Left of Straight Radio guy has the power to add some bleeps here or there. So I guess we'll leave the editing pending.
Well,
I'm okay with it, but he could edit.
I just have the heart. You know, well, Scott knows my mouth, so I was just about to censor myself. But I'll just say, you know, it's what happens on Twitter on a Sunday morning when you're watching CNN and worrying about your friends in Florida. You know, so. Hopefully we will get you know, send them all some love and hope they all get through this. And it's a strange time in our world, isn't it?
It is. I want to give equal time to between us, between our co-hosts, but I will fire off the first question. Del, what is a very sordid wedding in your own words? Obviously, it's a sequel to Sordid Lies, but what would you like the world to know about your film?
Well, I think I loved what was just said. That really describes it well. Where it's what happens when equality comes storming into rural Texas, and you know, we have seen such progress in our community and achieving nationwide marriage equality through. The ruling of the Supreme Court on June 26, 2015. We all remember that day. I mean, that day's imprinted on my back with a tattoo. So,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see all these haters rear their ugly heads and start screaming loudly about, you know, two people who love each other by cherry picking some scriptures. So I have a couple of my characters really take on the church in Winters, Texas, the church is having an anti-equality revival. And as ludicrous as that sounds, it's not really that ludicrous given what's happened and what we've seen. But also, I wanted to really celebrate in this movie that there are allies that we have gained who have evolved. And we see that through the characters of Sissy and Latrell. So that's my kind of assessment of it. And of course, it's got all the wacky, crazy sordidness as well. So gotta.
So it's zany. Can't be fun, but with a real message. I like that. Thank you, Del. I'm going to defer the next few questions to my wonderful co-host, Delina. Thank you.
Hey, Del.
Hi.
I really.
How are you?
Hi. I really enjoyed your sequel. It was laugh out loud funny at different times. I am curious about why you decided to do the sequel now after 17 years.
Oh, I got bored. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not. I don't get bored. That's the. It's so odd. I didn't really plan to return to the Sordid franchise after the series went away. I just thought that was it. We're done. And it was because of the fans, and they kept demanding. They wanted to know what happened to these characters, and that question, what happened to them, sort of unlocked it for me initially. That I thought, well, if I'm going to do a sequel, I'm not just going to do some silly story that isn't relevant. I think what I need to do is to catch us up on these denizens of Winters, Texas. And it's kind of like, you know, those blogs where you see where are they now, and you mm-hmm. go, oh, you know, where is you know, the Partridge Family? where are these actors? And so that really helped just to go, what has happened? Because you've got Ty, who was coming out at his grandmother's funeral in the first one. But since then, I was able to make him openly gay and proud and having married and working for Faith in America, going from state to state, getting, as Sissy says, gay married, as a publicity thing for the gays, and Texas was the final state, and his own home state he saved till last, and he had an agenda. He was waiting till his mother would throw him the wedding, and that's you know, and so that, and that's not the only a very sordid wedding has a few weddings in it, so there's some surprises as well.
Awesome. And you had mentioned about sort of the journey that Luttrell Williamson goes on in terms of her accepting her son. I thought it was really interesting and sort of timely of what's going on in the country right now in terms of there's more acceptance and at the same time there's more backlash from, you know, the far right religious people. So it was really interesting timing.
Yeah, it was that really played a big, big part in me returning to this, and the fact that I was able to get Bonnie Bedelia to return to that role. I just love her so much in this movie. It's one of my favorite performances of anything I've ever done. She and Dale Dickey, who plays Sissy in this movie, together are just it's kind of a masterclass in acting for any young actors who want to see how truly brilliant someone can do and scratch so deeply and be so complicated and so complex. I think you agree. It's quite a performance.
Yeah, it was a great cast. They have a great chemistry together.
Yes, well, they all did. And, of course, you've got Leslie Jordan returning as Brother Boy. You have Caroline Ray, who possibly gives my favorite two-minute monologue of my career when she just tells her whole life story in a nervous rant. I'm so lucky that I get to work with brilliant actors, and they work for me in a little independent film like this and do it for the passion and not for the money. I mean, we got Whoopi Goldberg to do a cameo in this. So that was pretty amazing as well.
Yeah, she was definitely amazing in this. And you introduced a new character named Billy Joe Dobson, played by Emerson Collins. I really enjoyed his performance as well.
Yeah, you and a lot of people enjoyed the performance. You know, a serial killer with a heart of gold, and a lot of gay men and straight women are really enjoying his sexiness in this movie. So Emerson is also the producer of this movie, and he's the key producer, which is extraordinary because there are very few people that I know who have equal sides of their brain working to a degree that he does, and he is truly so brilliant as an actor and just flawless as a producer. He's the one who I wouldn't have been able to make this movie without Emerson.
I am so glad you both brought up Emerson. If I can just throw this out there for your folks real quick, we are actually supposed to tease that he is going to be appearing here on Leftist Straight Radio. Emerson Collins will be appearing on Leftist Straight Show on Tuesday, September 26th. So that'll be great.
Oh, yay.
One, one question for you, Dale, because we're talking writer to writer, director to director here. So we're going mono y mono. I can tell you that when I'm in church or out in the community and people are just saying some really outrageous blank, I take notes and I take observations and I soak that stuff in as a writer. I'm just really dying to know, from your entire Sorted series to your work, are you observing people? Are there stuff that people say and do that becomes food for your writing? Like, how does your writing process work?
Oh, my God. Well, it's that. I mean, I have a new one-man show called Six Characters in Search of a Play. And basically what I do in this show is I introduce you to people that I have met and have been a part of my life, or just an encounter, one encounter. And then I take them as inspiration and then perform a monologue as them in this show. And I often say I'm not really a writer. I'm a thief. And when I was a kid, when I was a little boy, growing up in Winters, Texas, where Sorted Lives is set, I had this dichotomy of a family where my dad was a Southern Baptist preacher and my mother was a high school drama teacher, and all of her family are a lot of the people I write about. And I would just have this vivid, crazy imagination and come in and tell these whopping lies about what I did that day. You know, I flew over on a turkey over the mountain with my Nana, and we had a tea party with Jesus and the disciples and my doll Susie Q, and my dad would just be appalled, and he was like, you must stop telling stories. And my mother and her family would ask, well, what else happened? So they really encouraged me to basically lie. And that it's always been that way for me, where I see something and I go, oh, I'm gonna use that. I gotta use that. And I have to tell you, there's a part in the film where they with this anti-equality revival that's going on, that Levi Christ, Tony Award winner, who won the Tony for playing Jerry Lee Lewis in A Million Dollar Quartet, he plays Jimmy Ray Bruton, yes, is the name of the preacher. And I thought, well, let me just call the courthouse down there and just find out how they're dealing with gay marriage. And this was right after it happened. And that's all I needed. I mean, I talked to this woman, and she said, well, she was the county clerk, and she said, well, I tell you how I'm handling it. If they come in here, if a gay couple comes in here and asks for their, you know, for their marriage license, I will give it to them, but I will also give them a piece of my mind about their relationship. And I said, well, is that a part of your job? And she said, it is now, and it's part of my relationship with Jesus Christ. And I thought, well, that's all I need. You know? And so I took, you know, I take that. That's a germ, and then you create a character wrapped around that. And I mean, Jesus, how many times have we heard? I mean, look what's going on right now. Pat Robertson, crazy old fuck, is saying that these floods are going to hit every state until gay marriage is over. It's all because of, you know, the gays. And so you in the movie, E. Luttrell, you know, this is brought up about the gays causing these hurricanes and even fire ants. And Luttrell goes, well, I just don't feel like the gays wield that much power over the weather. You know?
So Dale, we actually heard from our Standards and Practices Department, a.k.a. a technical assistant, Scott. Standards and Practices demand at least one fuck you. They demand it from you.
Oh. Well, you know,
incredible?
I have all those letters. That's so great. I wish I could. Where is that? I just did a show in D.C. a couple of days ago, and I could actually find this. I will read you, because I'm known in my shows for reading these letters to these haters, and they're called my P.S. Fuck You letters. And so I wrote one to Pat Robertson, given what he has said. Yeah,
Pat Robertson.
I'll read. How about How about us? Maybe we can end this with me giving you
are you
a
on
Pat
board
Robertson
with this,
letter.
Selena? I'm okay with this.
I think it's awesome.
Okay, so here, just to give you some of his quotes. You know, he's just a crazy old man. I mean, the danger is he looks like your grandpa, and he looks in the camera and does this, you know, his speech with such compassion, and like you think, oh, and you go, wait, what the fuck is that? So he's like, so post Orlando, he said, the best thing to do is sit on the sidelines and watch the Muslims and the gays kill themselves. That's a Pat Robertson quote. And then after after Harvey, he said, God will flood all 50 states if the gays keep getting married. Okay, and then this is my favorite. He goes, the widespread practice of homosexuality will bring about the destruction of this nation. It will bring terrorist bombs. It will bring earthquakes, tornadoes, and possibly a meteor. It isn't necessarily something we ought to open our arms up to. So here's what I wrote him. Short and sweet. Dear Pappy Pat, you must be the most bigoted, old, ignorant fool still living. Please shut up already. Or perhaps there's another option that will make you shut up. You have often said, I just can't wait to meet Jesus. Well, go. Just go. Get out of here. Die. You will not be missed. In Christ, Del Shores. P.S. Fuck you. So,
you're killing me, Del. You're killing us.
So, you know,
that's
at
beautiful.
Least one, you got about 10 there in about 2 minutes.
I'm going to give you 10 Hail Marys for this. You're getting 10 Hail Marys, okay?
All right. Well,
that's
guys,
great.
It's been wonderful talking to you. I'm in San Francisco right now with my daughter, who came to the premiere with me last night, and her grandparents, who are the real Dr. Evan Wardell. So we're having a great time in the city. And there's so many cities coming up with A Very Sordid Wedding. So if you go to averysordidwedding.com, it lists all of them. And, you know, last night we were in Shreveport, Emerson, and Ann Walker, who plays LaVonda, were there. And we were here in San Francisco. We've got Toledo, Walla Walla, Washington, Portland, Chicago, Indianapolis, Asbury Park, New York City, Washington, D.C., Columbus, Ohio, Knoxville, Saugatuck, Michigan, Winston-Salem, Rochester, and Houston. So, and a few, there are a few more
wow.
that aren't on the list yet. So we still have quite a little tour, and the DVD drops October the 17th. And if you go to averysordidwedding.com, you can just press those buttons and order it. And we are the number one LGBT film right now on Amazon and iTunes.
Yes.
So we're
That's
very
cool.
happy about that. Yeah, it's going well.
It was so nice of you to drop by, Del Shores. We really appreciate it. Any last
oh,
questions?
Oh, you're so
Selena?
Welcome. Y'all
I don't
have
know.
A good
Thank you so
Sunday.
Much, Del, for taking the time.
This beats church, y'all. I'll talk to you later.
Ten
Bye.
Hail Marys. Thanks, Del. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
All right, folks. That was Del Shore, the writer-director of A Very Sordid Wedding. We really appreciate Del coming by the show. This year listening to Brandon Carmody and Delena Roberts. We're going to go on with our entertainment segment. That will be hard to beat, won't it?
It will. He's a lot of fun.
Oh, that was great. Why don't we talk about Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman? I'm going to punt the football over to you. You've got a lead-in for this.
Sure. Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman is based on a true story of Professor Marston, who had an unconventional life and relationship back in the 1920s. He was the creator of the original Wonder Woman comics. And the original comics were quite controversial at the time. There was a lot of violence and bondage and kind of stirred up a lot of controversy when it was first released. The film will be released October 13th. It stars Luke Evans as Professor Marston, Rebecca Hall as his wife Elizabeth, and Bella Heathcote as their mistress Olive Byrne. It was written and directed by Angela Robinson.
Okay, and we do have the trailer for Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. Here we go.
Who's Charles Moulton?
That is my pseudonym.
Why don't you write Wonder Woman under your real name? Because most Americans have a low opinion of comic book writers? Or is it something else?
The person is most happy when they are submissive to a loving authority.
I want to study her.
She'll break your heart.
Don't be jealous.
I'm your wife, not your jailer.
I think you long for an unconventional life.
Maybe I just want her because you do. You think it's possible to love two people at the same time?
Why not?
What is normal?
It can never happen.
The world won't let it.
The world can't stop us.
Is this what you really want? Dr. Marston, every issue of Wonder Woman is filled with violence, torture, and sadomasochism. This abnormal behavior in your comic is reckless.
A woman must not be told how to use her freedom. She must find out for herself.
If you want to understand the mind of a woman, you can start with that.
You are brilliant, pure of heart, hilarious, ferocious.
You
are my life.
Wonder Woman has a secret identity. Why is that?
She has to hide her true self from man's world.
What would happen if Wonder Woman's secret identity was revealed?
Everything would be lost.
I wonder if you're the one with the secret identity.
Hey, and we're back live now. Brandon Carmody and Delina Roberts. You just heard the trailer for Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. I got to say, Delina, it does look very interesting. Obviously, radio doesn't do the trailer as much credit as seeing it, but my comment is that looks much more Hollywood than the Independence, like we just heard with the Sordid Wedding. This looks more Hollywood. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is definitely a little more Hollywood. I think you're going to see some really strong performances from the main actors, and also one of the people that you heard in that clip was Connie Britton, who sort of plays the woman interrogating Professor Marston. So it's going to be a real powerhouse cast.
That's funny that you say that, because I just got for my birthday a copy of 24 Season 5. Connie Britton starts off in the very beginning of Season 5 of 24 as Jack Bauer's girlfriend, except she doesn't know he's Jack Bauer because he's in hiding. So that's the first time I saw her. So we're into overdrive here. We have exactly 7 minutes, so we're going to finish out with Catherine Brooks' Lost in Time. I would like to start off by saying that I've interviewed Catherine Brooks twice. She has worked extremely hard to write, produce, and direct Lost in Time. It is very personal, based on her story. What would you like to lead off with about Lost in Time?
Yeah, Lost in Time is really a passion project for Catherine. She's been working on this for over 13 years now and has really poured her heart and soul into it. The movie was actually inspired by Catherine's own experience back in Thailand during the 2004 earthquake and the tsunami that followed. And she ended up writing this film, which tells the story of Evan White, who's played by Kate Gray, who survived the devastating disaster and is understandably traumatized by this tragic event. Evan actually believes that she died, so she seeks help from a talented therapist named Dr. Catherine James, who's played by Jill Hennessy. And together they explore what happened to Evan in Thailand, and both of their lives are transformed through that experience. The film was crowdfunded via GoFundMe and some other sources. And Catherine is going to be giving a private screening for all the backers on September 29th and October 6th. and we're still waiting on an announcement on what the distribution deal is going to be after that.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, we're going to hear from Catherine here. This is a clip from this is just incredibly gracious of her, but she shared some thoughts with me about the experience on that fateful day, the day after Christmas in 2004, when the real tsunami happened, which has inspired her to write some films. So let's hear from the creator, Catherine Brooks, in her own words, if we may.
Just looking at the physicality of it, the undersea megathrust earthquake was caused when the Indian plate was subducted by the Burma plate, and it triggered a series of devastating tsunamis along the coast bordering the Indian Ocean, and it ultimately did kill 230,000 people in 14 countries, which include Sri Lanka, India, and Thailand. So moving into your story, so obviously I was in Salem, Oregon, reading this on a text message from the comfort of the United States. Would you mind telling our listeners, where were you on December 26, 2004, Catherine?
I was on the southern Thailand island of Koh Phi Phi when a tsunami wave hit that island and washed over it. And, it's taken, it's been 12 years now, almost 13 years. It's taken that long to be able to, you know, finally make a film about it, because what happened to me on that island cannot be explained or really understood. But so I knew that I had to make a film about it, because people are, for some reason, I felt that if I could show it visually, and have them, you know, because when we watch a movie, you know, you put yourself in the character's shoes, you kind of become the character, you emotionally connect with the character. And I knew that people would understand if I made a movie about it, not just sort of.
Okay, sorry to cut Catherine Brooks short there, but seconds back with Dana Roberts. You hear the sincerity in her voice, and as you said, it was a passion project. Any thoughts on Catherine Brooks taking such a personal, life-changing experience and translating that into an LGBT film?
Well, I think it's very brave of her. I think that a lot of her experiences and her other films have been very personal as well, although not quite as personal as this one. But I mm-hmm. see her pouring a lot of herself into all of her work.
Yeah, and for the folks at home, Catherine Brooks is the filmmaker behind films like Loving Annabelle and Waking Madison. Those are the namesake ones that if you name drop those, most people think, oh, yeah, Loving Annabelle, right, Waking Madison. So she's got mm-hmm. some experience, and she's done work in television and film. So one of the things that I, as a filmmaker, can tell you is if at a certain point in time and you save up enough money and you've done the bigger projects, you eventually get to do something that's personal, the passion project, that Hollywood might be like, oh, okay, I guess we'll let you do that one since you did the other ones for us, you know? You get to earn your way to this point.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it finally.
Very good. So we are going to finish out with the trailer. So, Dwayne, thank you very much for joining me today and having a chat with Del Shores and going over the films. Once again, just to recap our list, on this entertainment segment today, we talked about A Very Sordid Wedding, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, and Lost in Time by Catherine Brooks. Delina, thank you.
Thanks so much, Brandon.
The night before it happened, I heard a voice. And what did this voice say?
It said, get off the island.
Please tell me what happened in Thailand.
I don't want to remember. It's too much.
If you died in that tsunami, how are you sitting here with me right now?
Your job's life and death, but you know what? It's fine. Like, every minute of the day, I'm expecting somebody to call me saying, you know what? You're paid to kill them stuff.
Thank you.
And we're back live with you now on the Brain and Triangle. I really want to thank my incredible co-host, Delina Roberts from LesFlix.com, for dropping by and helping us out with some incredible LGBTQ film reviews. And, of course, writer-director Del Shores, director of A Very Sordid Wedding, which is in limited release right now and comes out on DVD on October the 17th. And now, for our listeners here on the Brain and Triangle, we have a special surprise for you. It's kind of like a Back to the Future or a Star Trek timeline joke, but ta-da, that entertainment segment you just heard was actually pre-taped, and that was pre-taped from 1 week ago. So we have a special attaboy here, A Very Sordid Wedding, again by Del Shores, and Emerson Collins had its Portland, Oregon premiere last night, which was the 16th, Saturday, and the premiere was hosted by Sordid Lives creator Del Shores and producer Emerson Collins with a Q&A following the screening. They were incredibly inviting and generous to me and to Left to Straight Radio, giving me exclusive access. So without further ado, we have a special soundbite. First, an interview with Del Shores, a very busy director, Del Shores, greeting his guests, and then a little bit from the Q&A. Let's check it out.
You're listening to Left to Straight Radio. My name is Brandon. We are here with the very busy writer, director, producer, actor, stand-up comedian Del Shores, who's a master of the Texas comedy in Portland, Oregon, at the premiere of A Sordid Wedding. Del, oh my God, you've got to be so excited right at this moment.
It's the Oregon premiere, because this is our 41st city.
41st.
This is our 41st.
You're on tour with this thing, man.
Yeah, we are on tour. We've been going since March. March 10th that we opened in Palm Springs.
Okay.
We've been going from city to city, but we have a sold-out crowd here tonight, and we're really excited to be in Portland.
And are you clearly noticing some differences in the different towns you go to, different audiences, different flavors of audience?
I mean, there's one of my friends and investors in this movie. I have to say hi to my investor. Hey, how are you?
The very busy Del Shores on the huge premiere. This is really exciting. Del Shores is here with a fantastic crowd. He has a very loving crowd here to see your big movie.
Yeah.
So this is the sequel to a...
Oh, we were saying something.
Well, the different cities. You're traveling...
Oh, you know what? I mean, in the South, it's crazy. But the wonderful thing, Portland has a huge Sordid Lives fan base.
Do they?
They've done the play here two or three times.
Awesome.
And so I'm surprised somebody told me they were going to cut some of the cast was going to come dressed as the characters, which
so
I
Portland gets
love.
It. Portland really gets
Portland
it.
Portland gets it. So this is going to be a great crowd tonight. Yeah.
Does the South just sit there in silence? No.
No. This is Southern.
Okay.
Why the South goes nuts?
Do they?
Yeah, the Northern.
There's some howling and some cackling
and all the religious stuff. We, because we all grew up with Damage in the South. So no, the South.
I'm laughing on the inside.
I always say my material plays best in a red state.
Okay.
Because I'm alternative programming. So.
Now, your show tonight here in Portland, Oregon is sold out.
It is sold out, yes. We are completely sold out. We're a little oversold, actually.
Has that been a commonality throughout your tour?
Mostly. I would say 80% of all of them have sold out.
Yes. But you were just talking about how Portland loves and is ready for Sordid Wedding.
I was just up here. They did the play up here a few months ago, so I was just here in Portland. And, we love Portland. So we like any place that, where they... There's nothing worse than not having a sellout. I mean, we're ill-attended, which that has not happened.
Now, I brought some reviews. You probably read them. I've got L.A. Times. I've got, but you know what's in the reviews. Are you happy with these reviews? Are you feeling that they're being fair and generous?
I feel like they're pretty good. I mean, we Rotten Tomatoes, we have 82%. We have one bad one from Variety. So, to quote Steve Martin, I saw him on Johnny Carson many years ago, and he brought a stack of reviews from Pennies from Heaven, and they were all raves. And Johnny said, "Well, Steve, I've read some that weren't so great." And he goes, "Oh, those were the incorrect reviews."
Oh, right.
So that
right.
Variety was the incorrect review. Everybody else was correct.
Nice. Yeah. Well, the LA Times one is with it. And what's next after Portland?
That would have been cruel, by the way, if you had brought the Variety one and read it to me.
No.
Like the bad.
I didn't. But where are you going next with the film? What's the next city?
Tomorrow night, Chicago.
Nice.
So we're literally getting up 5 o'clock in the morning, getting on a plane at 7. We'll be in Chicago for a 4 o'clock and a 7:30 screening tomorrow.
And this is coming out on DVD in October.
October 17th.
Okay.
So for everything Sordid Wedding, go to averysordidwedding.com. It will tell you the rest of the cities. We've got about 15 more to go. And then the DVD comes out, and
okay,
it's all starting over again. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to see this, and Whoopi Goldberg, wow.
Yes, Whoopi, you have to wait till the end of the movie, but she isn't.
Okay, okay. Del, thank you so much for taking a few moments with us, and we look forward to that Q&A at the end.
Awesome, awesome.
All right, folks, that was, of course, just a few minutes before the screening. People were still filing into the auditorium. Now, please note for the record that both the staff of the Clinton Street Theater and a few others were trying to get people to scooch in because you had a beyond sold-out show, but eventually they did get everybody seated. I was prepared to stand in the back, so I want to personally thank Del and Emerson for helping me secure a seat. Now, the audience loved A Sordid Wedding. I loved A Sordid Wedding. There are some incredible performances in this film. Bonnie Bedelia soars. Ann Walker is breathtaking. Leslie Jordan is hysterical beyond belief. Caroline Ray, Whoopi Gold. There's just, it goes on and on. The film is amazingly funny, but it has deeper messages, and I think that you will really appreciate it, but we have a surprise clip for you. This is from the Q&A. This is Emerson Collins, who, by the way, when I showed up at the theater, Emerson Collins was personally working the booth. And here I am, like a little reporter, like, I'm supposed to report in for Left of Straight Radio. And he literally looks at me through the glass of the booth like, oh, yes, come on in. So thank you, Emerson. Thank you, Del. Here is Emerson Collins telling the story about Whoopi Goldberg's appearance and working with them on the film. Enjoy.
Here. And we were so excited, and I think this is a reflection of why so many great actors come to do Del's work in our low-budget film world, because he said, you know, you've been an ally for our community for so many years, you understand it's a sermon, you can just make it your own and say what you want. And she said, well, what you wrote is rather brilliant, how about I just say that? And I love that. And so she shot with us for 5 hours. She was amazing with all of the cast, with all of the crew, gracious and friendly. She shot a little six-minute thing that's going to be on the DVD. So we got to the end of the evening, and I was walking her back to the bus, and she said, honey, I just get on the bus, I go to the back and fall asleep, and I get off, and they tell me I'm at the next place. I have no idea where I am. And I said, you know, that's so interesting. Your people spent so many years working to get to the front of the bus. And she said, oh, honey, the difference is now I own the bus.
Yeah. All right, that's a wrap up for me on A Sordid Wedding premiere. Once again, thank you to writer director Del Shores and actor and producer Emerson Collins. Congratulations on a sold out show in Portland, Oregon. The film is absolutely brilliant, and I really appreciate getting the opportunity to see it. I hope everyone will check out A Sordid Wedding in limited release right now and out on DVD on October 17th. Reporting for the Brandon Triangle, this is Brandon Carmody.
Once again, you've been listening to the Brandon Triangle on Left to Straight Radio. I'm Brandon Carmody. I would really like to thank all of my guests today, Kathy Renna, Selena Roberts from LesFlix.com, Del Shores, the writer and director of the very funny, incredible, A Very Sordid. You are listening to the Brandon Triangle on Left to Straight Radio. We'd like to thank Left to Straight Radio and Scott Fullerton for giving us this incredible airtime to speak to you, the LGBTQ plus community. This is where it all happens, and we will be here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, bringing you all points of view. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next Sunday.